You know, we got this little thing over here called the University of Minnesota, not too far away, and they're doing some really great work over there on climate and environment. This is Jessica Hellman. She's the director of the Institute on the Environment at the U of M. She is a biologist whose research focuses on global change ecology and climate adaptation. She's argued that adaptation, living with climate change, is just as crucial to our collective future as stopping greenhouse gas emissions. Please welcome Jessica Hellman.
Hello.
So thank you for coming and doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Give me the elevator speech. What's the U of M Institute on the Environment do?
Oh, it's a wonderful place. So the Institute was created to aggregate across a massive university like the University of Minnesota. There are environmental scholars in every field and discipline, and we have to have ways to come together and work collaboratively, because these real-world problems like climate change need us to work across these fields. So our job is to aggregate those scholars and then put them to work on real-world problems like food and ag and land sustainability and biodiversity and climate change. And we usually work with people outside the university, and we're very oriented on tangible solutions.
Great elevator speech. I think that was about 8 floors. That was perfect. So where are we, do you think, when it comes to climate change? Are the building blocks there for us as humans to do a better job of prospering with nature?
Yeah, actually, I was talking to a group of students about this recently, that, you know, why would you want to study environmental science? You know, are all the important questions answered? And it's an interesting sort of duality that on the one hand, the evidence and the knowledge that we have is so profound and quite clear that humanity has a strong influence on our environment, on all aspects of our environment, including our climate. On the other hand, there are still so many interesting questions and things to study, which is one of the reasons why I'm especially interested in this idea of adaptation, because we must address climate change. We must stop emitting greenhouse gases if we have any hope of adapting to the climate change we've already caused. But how we're going to do that really remains mostly unknown.
So that is kind of the big question. How are we going to do that? How do we as humans start to adapt?
Yeah, and it's kind of, I like to say adaptation is also the gateway drug to mitigation. That when you take a particular problem, like we were just discussing, Radhika was talking about water and stormwater runoff, or I tend to work on questions about natural resource conservation. So take a particular issue, something that's affected by climate change, and start unpacking that. What are the management strategies that are available to you? How could we go about addressing this? If it's larch beetle spreading across Minnesota and diminishing larch populations, okay, well, those play an important role in bog ecosystems. How could we substitute those with a different species, for example? And then you start thinking about how difficult that might be and how expensive it might be. And so there are a lot of viable strategies. They're not going to be easy to implement, and there will be side effects. That's the other important thing. And once you add all those numbers up, it does kind of make wind power look pretty appealing as an alternative strategy.
How are we doing as scientists when it comes to communicating on climate? I interview people all the time. There are rock stars out there,
yeah.
Rock star scientists. I mean, I can think of Michael Mann. I can think of Catherine Hayhoe, mm-hmm. among others, who just nail it. They do a great job. But as we know, scientists are a little introverted sometimes. How do we train scientists to be better communicators?
Yeah, I think even, there are some scientists that deserve to stand out front and talk to the public or are good ambassadors for us as a field, that's for sure.
Yes.
And I don't think we want to or need to put all of our environmental scientists and climate scientists in front of people. That's not the job of everyone to do. So I think we really should celebrate our science communicators and encourage them. But I also think it's worth admitting to ourselves as climate communicators, those of us who participate in it to a certain degree, that we have not always done a good job. I think we're getting better and we're getting smarter. It took a long time to realize that people actually care about people, not just about the climate. So how does the climate influence things that people care about? That's what we need to be talking about. I think we've gotten better about talking about really hard ideas that are hard to wrap your head around, like what is uncertainty? Mm-hmm. Scientists love to talk about uncertainty. No one has any idea what that really means. But it's about knowing, being clear about what we know and clear about what we don't know and the difference between the two. I think we've gotten more savvy about that. And now we teach, how do we teach climate scientists? It's actually easier in the sense that young people, and I can say this for students I interact with at the University of Minnesota, they actually want to be at that interface. Many, many people want to do science that is directly relevant to social problems, and they're eager to engage in that boundary between science and society. And I think that's, you know, some of our climate science community got into it because they could sit behind a computer and no one would bother them. But maybe our own culture is changing a little bit.
You know, I kind of get uncertainty, but I'm just not really sure about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You're uncertain about
cheap.
Uncertainty.
So what about me? What about these people sitting a few feet away from us? What does the individual person do when it comes to adapting? Are there good resources for that? Where do you guide people?
There are, well, some of our young students were just talking about climate action plans. Oftentimes, some of the decision-making about what should be done and the priorities for is being tackled at the municipal level.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the adaptation actions will need to be taken in infrastructure, and they involve a certain amount of planning. You need to say, what are we going to do in this decade? What are we going to do in the next decade? Because this is a changing process. This is not something we just say, oh, well, we'll implement what 2050 is going to be like. We have to have a process of updating and adjusting. So you see a lot of city leadership. There are resources out there. There are some really great resources coming out for forest management, for example. The U.S. Forest Service has some new work plans that invite foresters to actually sit down and say, what are you trying to accomplish? What are the natural resources that are at risk? What are the viable options for you? There's actually a silver lining in some adaptation work in that, especially in the natural resource space, we sometimes are managing resources without being very clear about what our goals are.
Mm-hmm.
And when the environment is changing and you have to manage differently, it causes you to actually be explicit about what we're trying to achieve. What are we managing this landscape for? And then to more clearly explain to the public what strategies are being used in order to achieve that management. So there are some actually great conversations that are happening around, say, natural resource management in the name of climate change, because it's bringing people together to tackle a new problem.
Interesting stuff. Jessica Hellman with the University of Minnesota, thank you so much
for
the perspective.
Thanks, Paul.